Ok, kanskje ikke det. Maria.
Hi.
Hello. Hello, everyone else. We'll try and have a conversation or to work together on the question, what are we working for? It's a good question. So I guess we need to start with the question, what is work? What is work? Is it distinct from labour? That's an old feminist question that is essentially a question about social reproduction. I guess it's a conversation that took place, especially between Hannah Arendt and Simone de Beauvoir, around the question about whether labour is something that is a kind of futile, repetitive, meaningless reproduction of life that has no other end than self-perpetuation, and whether work is something else. So Arendt would have maintained that work is something that produces something durable as opposed to the kind of endless repetition of, say, cleaning, cooking, and the raising of children. I mean, Arendt goes on to insist that for a politics to exist, human relating must escape the conditions of both work and labour. So in a way, the whole question of social reproduction then gets sidelined again and has to sort of be rethought, I guess, in the 1970s amongst a bunch of Marxist, socialist, feminist thinkers, where the debate really takes place around the question of whether the fight is going to be for equal access to waged work for women, to bring women into the workplace, or whether which entails a kind of acceptance, I suppose, of the lesser value accorded to unwaged domestic labour, or whether, in fact, what needs to happen is the revaluing of unwaged work that is household-based. And Kathy Weeks wrote a really interesting book called The Problem with Work, where she says actually both of those solutions don't solve the core problem, and the core problem has got to do with the wage itself, the mechanism of the wage. And so in a way, she was interested in the ways that the ideology of the family continued to mop up, if you like, the failures of the living wage. So the challenge was the problem of wage labour itself, and in the Wages for Housework campaign, in a way what was going on was an argument about the refusal to work, actually, and whether downing tools in terms of domestic labour, especially around childcare, was a viable way to unhinge the relationship between wage and labour. So, in a way, how I would come into that debate is to think about what it is that is still there in the demand for money. Money is precisely still a demand at some level for time to do things for one's own pleasure, for time to choose to be with others, especially with children, to do as one pleases outside this kind of area called work. So in a way, we're talking about whether there's a realm of unfettered time that lies outside of work that is distinct, if you like, from wage labour. Now, in many ways, that sort of characterisation that we've just described is a very anachronistic one, given that the very capacities for something like pleasure beyond work within capital have been themselves evoked to re-inject life into the sort of dead zone of work in attempt to keep labour living. So this is an argument that Cederstrom and Fleming have put forward that argues basically that capitalism draws in discourses of the social but also of the experimental, of the aesthetic and of the relational. So think about what we're all doing today. Those elements that we think of as somehow outside of capital are of course used to motivate a generation of workers who already know that capitalism is basically detrimental to us, the social world, and to the natural world. So in a way, we're asked not just to keep working, but also to take a rest, to take care of oneself, to take care of the environment, to find a life-work balance, to find quality, and basically to find time inside of work time that looks like it's leisure time. So the colonization completely of leisure time, if you like. Mm. So I think this raises two points that I'd want to sort of think about. One is there something that can be redeemed about working that is distinct from work? So what is working as a practice that might have some kind of meaning as a social activity and as a collective activity? So that's one question.
Before Lisa asks any other questions, it's my turn now, and I'm I'm going to talk about labor in relation to health and biomedicine. So Marx has shown us how value in capital is not a thing but a process, specifically one of self-valorization. Indeed, capitalist value presupposes self-valorization. Value is value because it makes more value. And this is fundamental to the dynamics of capital. You can't have capital without self-valorizing value. To put it in the schema that Marx uses in Capital Volume 1, money is invested into commodity circulation. For a capitalist, this only makes sense if money makes more money, right? So for a capitalist, MCM has to become MCM prime, where M prime is greater than M. So money must contain the capacity to add value to itself, to self-valorize, even as it apparently simply mediates the exchange of equivalents. And this is the magic of capital. It's also the meaning of what Marx calls surplus value. So there are three things at stake here. The first is that commodification is inherent in valorization. The second is that value does not simply express anthropological notions of use or exchange, it acquires its own subjectivity. The third is that this subjectivity of value depends upon the alienation of the worker's subjectivity through an appropriation of labor. So for M to have the potential to become M prime, there must always exist the potential of the worker to labor more than that which is remunerated in wage, and this is what Marx calls labor power. This generates surplus labor. So the key insight here is that capital generates value through an exploitation of bodily potential, even as the generation of value becomes an end in itself. So how does this relate to health? Joseph Dumit has provided the most literal answer to this question through his notion of surplus health, which is an analogy to surplus labor. This refers to the market value that pharmaceutical capital gains from the potential for future illness of those who might one day consume drugs, which includes anyone with the buying power to constitute a market for therapeutics, and crucially excludes those without. Empirically, Dumit has studied the growth of pharmaceutical marketing in the United States that has resulted in the progressive growth of prescription rates and the therapeutic saturation of the American population. Dumit suggests that labor is not the only form of bodily potential that can be exploited, so too can health. If one is a pharmaceutical company, one cannot be in the business simply of maintaining health, one has to grow it. This perverse statement cannot make sense if one thinks of health as an embodied state of well-being. Health has to become measurable, quantitative, an aggregate potentiality that can be valorized, just as labor becomes in processes of commodity exchange. Indeed, in such a logic, the curing of disease or healthy living is a threat to capital accumulation. Only constant and intensified pharmaceutical consumption is valuable. So what is being valorized here is the labor of therapeutic consumption in bodies that have the potential for illness. Alongside Marx's analysis of value is his notion of what he calls living labor, an equally vital concept that lies at the heart of his analysis. The notion of living labor is intimately related to the question of the exploitability and reproduction of labor, as Lisa has pointed out, of bodily potential for capital, which is, as feminist Marxists have insisted for decades, linked to the question of the reproduction of life. In domains of biomedicine, this speaks to Melinda Cooper's and Catherine Wolbe's analysis of what they call clinical labor. So Cooper and Wolbe speak to the engendering of new forms of labor in biomedical economies, bringing together labor in relation to new reproductive technologies, such as oocyte donation, with forms of labor operational in pharmaceutical development, such as experimental subjectivity in clinical trials. Their analysis has additionally been resonant and politically important to thinking about forms of contracted reproductive labor, such as surrogacy. So Dumit is showing capital's potential to appropriate domains beyond labor to other forms of bodily potential, such as health. Cooper and Wolbe are concerned with the expansion of domains of labor, the production of new kinds of labor with new modes of production, what Sandro Mazzadra and Brett Nielsen call the multiplication of labor. If Dubit analytically explains the expanded domain for the extraction of value, then Cooper and Wolbe are attending to the creation and exploitation of new forms of living labor. There's a further wrinkle here because the prescription maximization that Dumit explains is in the United States, and the exploited bodies Cooper and Wolby describe are elsewhere.
Okay, that's my turn to try and answer to the question what we are working for. Yeah, I would agree that in order to address, I don't know actually how to better to see it. So in order to address this question, we have to indeed consider, I think, two conditions. The first is the fact that, of course, we are conditioned by capitalist mode of production, and therefore, in fact, we are working for the reproduction of capital. Our labor always enters into the relation of exchange value that constitutes a specific contractual and economic form. And I think it was already analyzed in very precise terms. What I want to bring in is a specific reading of exchange value as both economic form and juridical form. And this is how Evgeny Pashukanis, a Marxist theorist of law, tries to kind of bring these two together. So the second condition is that we work for the reproduction of our lives, and this is what has been said. And I would say that, we all see this kind of contradiction between this command of to reproduce the capital and that we enter already immediately, our labor enters this dynamic and logic. But at the same time, more and more, it is in contradiction with the social reproduction, which can be considering, we can consider it in terms of shrinking welfare, destruction of the communal forms of life through, I don't know, different techniques of gentrification and displacement, production of refugees, by means of, by different means, and we have to consider also geopolitical context. Commodification of care, but this is what had been addressed as well. Colonization of life as such. So in this sense, there is a tension that there is no intermediary kind of smoothing mechanism which would allow to reproduce capital by incorporating the reproduction of life. So we see there is a kind of conflict and tension between the two. But this is analytic part of my intervention. I also try to, if I have time, to suggest that we can read the question, or we can consider the question of social reproduction, as I said, by bringing together this question of exchange value and legal contract, contractual form of contractual juridical form, whereby exchange assumes that there are two kind of wheels which then exchange labor for wage, and there is this sense of it is a kind of form of social contract which assumes the participation of two private kind of individuals in this process of exchange. This is how Pashukanis reads the exchange value, that it both economic and juridical form, that it means that this economic form is also kind of commands, contracts us to kind of be acting as these two autonomous wheels who possess a kind of private contractors, so to say. This is the origin of private property for Pashukanis in this logic of exchange value. So then the speculative part of what I'm trying to say is that to think about further kind of critique of reproduction of capital perhaps could imply that we have to seriously again return to the question of private property and the destruction of, or we have to aim to actually criticize the private property in relation to exchange value and in relation to value form as such. And only through that, perhaps, we can successfully discuss another important aspect, which is socialization of life or socialization of property, which now I don't have time to.
It's unbelievably stressful, actually, the time limit. I now have 1 minute to pick up the thread. But it's interesting how difficult it is to push back, actually, and to make some time to think under those conditions. It feels very much like being on a kind of factory floor with the clock. I just wanted to pick up something that Kaushik said, which was, I think one of the things we're circling around is whether there is an element within value, which I would think of in terms of care, that cannot be commodified. It's always a big question, you know, is everything open for commodification, or is there some element of care that we want to retain, at least the fantasy, that can't be commodified? And I suppose within practices like parenting, one might think about that as a form of emotional labor, or one might...
So Lisa, the question here for me, I mean, I wish the answer would be yes, but the counter question would be, who is the we who retains that fantasy? Because one of the things that I find with biomedical economies, when you have this differentiation of two forms of surplus value, right, is that it's very difficult to imagine a communism. It's very difficult to imagine the conditions of solidarity between a therapeutically saturated American patient and an experimental subject who is a female sex worker in Nigeria, who is being put on experimental medication for an AIDS medication, yeah. Right? And so there's something about the exploitation of bodily potential is universal, but it's also disaggregated, spatialized, and differentiated. And yeah. That makes imagining solidarity difficult.
Yeah, if I may, I also will attempt to try to address this problem of commodification of care or life as such. I would agree that I don't want to push any utopianism, but I would agree that within the capitalist mode of production, I think that there is a little space, but I would also to consider something purely outside of it as such. But then, since we within this machine, I guess we can discover still some leaps and gaps, because otherwise our life would be totally, I don't know, destructed. But I'm not sure how to conceptualize these leaps, which still have some place in our social life.
Okay, so here's a go at it. So one thing I'm interested in is the idea of what comes to matter to us, and whether the question of mattering is something that may lie not outside, but in a tangential relation to capital. So I wanted to raise what that might mean. And the second is to go back to this question of the difference between work and working. Mm-hmm. There's a really interesting sort of Marxist psychoanalyst, I love that conjunction, who talks about work as an experience that's not visible, actually, and that capitalism represses or invisibilizes working. It can only recognize the product of work, but it can't actually recognize something called working, which is a deeply subjective experience, and an experience, I guess, which needs to and does operate under the radar.
I like that very much, and I wish I could hear what you were going to say. but I'm going to remain the pessimist of sorts, in that I think that the question of is there an outside, I mean, the answer has to be yes, right? For our sanity, the answer has to be yes. But I think that there is no guaranteed outside,
yeah.
Right? Like we don't know that we can occupy a space that capital cannot reach. And the word I want to throw in here now, in addition to commodification, is financialization.
Okay.
Because outsides of commodification have not necessarily become socialized, they've often become financialized. And so there might be a conversation also to have about what is the structural and processual relationship between processes of commodification and processes of financialization. And that's maybe opening up a whole other can of worms.
Yeah.
But it's just to say that sometimes the outside of present capital is more speculative capital.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I will try to bring this tension between reproduction of capital and social reproduction. Don't you think you can't? I mean, structurally they belong. Okay, let's consider it as a structure. But structurally, there is a tension between these two dynamics. So, in other words, we cannot deterministically think that everything that is, you know, subordinated to the logics of commodification or financialization. This would also imply not purely autonomist position, but some kind of autonomy of social life or relative historical and social experiences. If you look across the world, of course, you would find the mixture of different social experiences outside of this dominant logics. I don't know how to... I can't develop.
Okay, here's a quote from Kathy Weeks. So she talks about this area that we're trying to describe as somehow lying outside of capital with the phrase, get a life. So she wants to substitute value, right, rethinking the common production of value with the common reproduction of life. And in the phrase, get a life, she is acknowledging that a life does not lie outside biopower. A life is not exterior to work. A life is not also captured by the notion of life in a vitalist philosophical sort of perspective. But what it might mean is a striving, she says, for a full life that is common to and shared with others without being the same as others. Okay? So a full life would include but not be subsumed by reproduction or work. And I want to know within that get a life, what is the processes by...
And I would love to hear that question, which now I cannot answer. But I think there's something very interesting here, because we're talking about, I mean, clearly we are searching for and yearning for conceptually and politically something that is anti-capitalist.
Yeah.
And one way to think about that is the insides and outsides of capital. But the other way that is perhaps useful to think about is about the contradictions between multiple capitalisms. Because capitalism as a singular is meaningless. Marx doesn't use the word. There are dynamics of capital, but it materializes in different capitalisms. And there are contradictions between financialized and commodified forms of capitalism. Industrial and financial capital are often competing with each other. And the question is, how might we work within and with capitalisms in strategic kinds of ways to also subvert it in contestation?
Yeah, I would just add to that, if we consider in different capitalisms, which I think as a framework is useful, but yet too generic and abstract, perhaps again, this Pashukani's idea that exchange value is at the same time this judicial form, which implies the social contract between two private individuals and therefore constitutes the private property. But there are indeed different contexts or different capitalisms where the private property is not dominant. And you know, this just alludes me to famous and perhaps quite old-fashioned observation of Marx regarding Russian peasant communes as the form from the past, but it's as something that in fact bears the kind of alternative within, you know, despite.
Don't you think it's interesting that we're so good at obeying the rules, and we don't actually have to do what we were asked to do? We could just carry on talking. I think it's really funny. Here we are trying to talk about kind of multiplicity of capitalisms and like, you know, how on earth we can think outside of the system, and we're all completely signed up to the system. Okay, I think I've got about 2 seconds left. I don't know what I want to say. Hey? Or an hour, yeah, or an hour, yeah. I mean, actually, we're not quite there yet, but I think we're actually going to move towards having a conversation with you guys, people, individuals, species, animals, which we might do by just finding.
I mean, there's no way to wrap this up, but I wanted, Maria, to reiterate your point about, I mean, this is one of the reasons why the law is so important to me, right? And the law has been a very difficult site for Marxism, because on the one hand, the law is inherently bourgeois and operates with property ownership at its heart, certainly in its sort of Western liberal form. On the other hand, it also provides a site for antagonism with and within capitalisms. And so this question of how one might think with the law to articulate antagonistic relationships within and amongst capitalisms, I think becomes a really interesting question. And Pashukanis is so interesting, but in the history of 20th century Marxism, Marxism on the whole has, I think, had a difficult relationship with the law and has perhaps not thought through this as much as it might have. Ahead of time.
In relation to that, I've been reading recently what I can just refer to as a beautiful and very interesting article of Antonio Negri, who wrote on Pashukanis in, I don't know, in 70s and early 70s. And this is quite a serious study of Pashukanis and his reception and why he, and complicated indeed relationship of Marxism with law and legal theory. And it's been translated, this article, like a year ago. And he actually tries to provide a new and a fresh also outlook of how it can be reconsidered from the standpoint of current debate. So I just want to refer to this beautiful study, which for me was fascinating to think in relation to the question of private property and socialization.
That's
for the first time when
we have leisure time.
I think we're going to be disciplined in a minute and the microphones are going to go off. But just, should we just quickly try to gather up then what we've said so far? So I think we've been trying to talk about value and its relation to life. We've been trying to think about work in relation to care. I think we've been trying to speak about labor. I think we've been trying to talk about multiple forms of capital, whether to think inside or outside capital, or whether to think about multiplicity within capital. We've been trying to think about financialization, for example, rather than commodification. Mm-hmm. We've raised an issue about social reproduction, but also about socialization. Mm-hmm. Help me. What else?
Perfect.
Is that enough?